when we're digesting a colonial curriculum, because that's what it is, it's just, it's very, we need to rethink. Yeah, we need to rethink our assumptions.
Digesting the colonial curriculum is only going to give you colonial outcomes.
Yeah.
People are going to act with a colonial mindset. Listen, the things I've heard people my our age say.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm back. Yeah. Hey, guys. Welcome back to another episode of The Things You Can't Touch. This is the only podcast where philosophy meets the real world. And before we get into introducing the guest, I just want to say that this is a special episode, as you've seen from the thumbnail, but it's not just a celebration of World Philosophy Day. It is also a collaboration with one of the most important organizations in the industry right now. We are collaborating with the Black Curriculum. The Black Curriculum is an organization that is aspiring, aiming, campaigning to put Black history in the national curriculum 365 times a year. The website is in the bio description down below. Make sure you check it out. See how you can support, see how you can get involved. But now that that's out of the way, let's introduce today's guest. Today's guest is a third year politics and international student. What I will do is cut that out. Today's guest is a third year politics and international relations student at the University of Birmingham. He is increasingly interested in the politics of equity and equality. He has done a lot of writing documenting his reflections on social injustice on his Substack, Letters with Roots. Make sure you check it out. Again, it's in the description, guys. When I say check it out, I'm not joking. Don't air me. Actually, go click on the link. And as a representative of the Black curriculum, he would like to start a greater commentary on how we, as British citizens and citizens as a whole, can create institutions that are inclusive and create genuine equality. Please welcome Omarion.
Hey guys, I'm Omarion. Yeah, she just introduced me, so.
Thank you for greeting the people. How are you feeling?
Feeling good. I'm ready to talk.
Yeah.
More philosophy day, innit? So.
Thank you. It's good to come knowing the right things, because that's literally all we do here. We're just going to have a discussion, have a chat. Are you ready for the question to be revealed?
I've been waiting all day.
So okay, cool. So the question I have for you today, relevant to both what the Black curriculum does and just philosophy as a whole, is short and sweet. Is knowledge power? Wow.
Knowledge is power.
Okay.
But yeah, knowledge is power, and those without knowledge don't have a lot of power. And they're easily exploited. That's what I'll say. I think
you're now tuned into the Things You Can't Touch podcast. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And remember, this is a philosophy podcast.
People without knowledge are easily exploited. And when we think about the American election, I think there was a lot of misinformation and a lot of disinformation. And the people at the, I guess, the wrong end of that have voted not in their best interest, but obviously don't want to get too political. Everyone's entitled to their own opinions.
Absolutely.
But disinformation was rampant beyond anything we've seen before. And research has gone into that. So
let's talk about that real quick. You said information. I want to zoom into that word. Because is having information the same thing as having knowledge?
I think anyone who can call themselves knowledgeable has to have information or has to be informed in some sense. So I think,
Does it work the other way around though?
What? Having information, wait.
You said if everyone who has, what you said is that everyone who is knowledgeable has to have information. But if you have information, does that make you knowledgeable?
No, I suppose not. No, it doesn't make you knowledgeable.
Why?
I guess, I don't know. I think you can have a lot of information at your disposal and then still not be knowledgeable. Or, I don't know, I can't be in someone else's mind. I mean, I guess I feel like I have a lot of information and I read a lot, like what's going on every day in the news. And I feel like that to some extent makes me knowledgeable, but a lot of other people do that as well and they draw completely different conclusions. That I would say in my opinion, are less knowledgeable. Or I guess, yeah, I just don't agree with their opinions. And then I think that's not knowledgeable, but they've just got a different, they've come to different conclusions from what they've been informed on. So
the way that you're speaking about knowledge, it suggests that knowledge has a true or false city about it. In philosophy, you call that cognitivism. If something is cognitive, it has a true or false value. So just
educating
myself. Yeah, I just, you know, don't say that you didn't come and learn at the things you can't touch. But yeah, if you're, the way that you just spoke about knowledge there is that is to say that a form of knowledge is true, like the knowledge that you have is true or false. And I just, yeah, I want to interrogate that, because that's literally the next thing that I wanted to say. When we look at the concept of knowledge and power, what, I don't know, usually we define, so let's see what, like, what are we working with when we look at knowledge and power?
What, defining knowledge and defining power?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be Google or Oxford Dictionary, but
I think knowledge is, I don't know, I don't want to repeat, is knowing, of course, things that can be true. I think there are definitely objective truths in the world, but there are also subjective truths. I mean,
sorry, subjective truth.
The subject, I don't know, because you know what it is? There's definitely objective truths, but there are also things that I may think of as true and someone else may think of as not true. Like, let's say, for example, religion. To me, as I feel like I am quite religious, like I'm a Christian person, and to me, Jesus is truth, but I can't say to a Muslim person that their God is not truth. Do you know what I mean? They're both subjective truths. And even though I may behave as if it's an objective truth,
my problem is that subjective. Sorry, like I've just interrupted you, but I wanted to say that my problem is that I think saying objective truth is a tautology. Like, truth in and of itself is objective, so there is no such thing to me as a subjective truth. I don't know if you agree with me, but I think the world has become too lenient with things like diversity and inclusion is great, but when it comes to something like truth, you don't have to include everything. Some things are just true and some things are not. So when it comes to subjective truths, even with the example that you gave, at the end of time, somebody's going to find out.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. Or both people are going to find out, and all we know is, I don't know, God doesn't even exist. Do you know what I mean? So that was very much a detour that I took. But yeah, when we look at
defining power.
Let's arrange ourselves. Yeah. Defining power. So knowledge, just to recap, is,
I think knowledge is having an understanding of some sort of objective truth.
I think I like that. Hold on to that. Now, power.
Power. I think that's an even more difficult question, to be honest. Obviously, politics and IR student, I think power manifests itself in so many ways. I think power is getting what you want out of someone else. Power is, I think power is being able to make other people do things that they wouldn't otherwise do.
And having an influence.
Yeah. I think that's like a politics definition. I remember learning that in first year. Like, politics is being able to get someone to do something that they wouldn't otherwise do.
Okay. Now, bringing them together, looking at the claim, because obviously everyone has heard knowledge is power. Mm. Looking at that, why does everyone accept that claim? Why is it deemed true?
Probably because if you know more than another person, you can manipulate the fact that you have more information than them and get them to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do. I can tell you that I know a lot of stuff about, I don't know, pharmacy, and then tell you that you should take ibuprofen instead of aspirin.
Yeah.
Because I have that knowledge.
Yeah.
I know that aspirin is supposed to be damaging to the stomach lining or something like that. And then you're probably more likely to believe me because you think I have that knowledge.
Okay.
So if I act as if I have that knowledge, so I can get you to do something that you wouldn't otherwise do.
I think that's what leads to my next question, which is, which comes first, the knowledge or the power?
Definitely knowledge, I think.
Okay. I disagree.
You think? Why? I'm interested now.
I have to take it back a couple of steps in order to explain why I disagree. When we look at knowledge, what I've realized is nobody actually knows anything. Because every claim to knowledge is an assumption. we actually have no way of proving whether anything is true. This is a problem in epistemology. Epistemology is the study of knowledge. And it's just that, when I say, I don't know, what's an example of something that I know? Tomorrow is Thursday. How do I know that tomorrow will even come? Like, the sun will rise tomorrow, for example. Just because it has risen all this time, does that mean that it's going to rise again? So what I'm basically saying is that nobody knows whether anything that they know is true. So I think nobody actually has true knowledge. But what we do have is assumptions, which is why it makes me start to question the link to power. Because if everybody's knowledge is equal, what deems one person's knowledge better than someone else's? And now I'm going to now get into the conversation that I really wanted to get into after we did all the definition stuff, which is, why is it the case that we take Western ideals as the gold standard? What makes the West and their, especially their ideas on like morality, for example, better than everybody else's? I think that's what I'm asking. And when we look at different power structures, we can see the same thing happening. So, for example, I already gave the example of the West. We can look at race. What makes one race better than the other? Is it power or knowledge? Is it neither? What makes one class better than the other? Is it power or knowledge, or is it neither? And then we can also look at the disparities in gender, looking at history, the history of misogyny, the history of sexism. Do you see where I'm coming from? Have I lost you?
No, you've got me. Do you know what? I have to change my answer now and say, you said what comes first, knowledge or power? And now I'm saying power comes first. Because even, I think if we think about what makes Western thought or Western ideals and morality and theories of being and theories of knowledge, what makes them more or seem as if they matter more, or or what they do run the world. Western ideas of how institutions are supposed to be run, they run the world. So I suppose power has come first, because Western powers have been in power for the last few hundred years. So then I suppose power has come before the knowledge. Because when the thing is, when Western ideals were triumphed across the world, they didn't actually have that much knowledge more than the other groups that they were coming to supposedly civilize. So I think power just, power must come first.
Exactly. Do you see? So it's it's a thing where, because I want to start interrogating things that the West have made us believe is automatically true. I feel as though there are assumptions, underlying assumptions that exist in our every single speech pattern, in our every single thought, in our every single degree and study, which is what I'm going to link to later. So for example, when we look at democracy, what is so great about democracy and what is so bad about a dictatorship? Truly. And it's just like, when you think about it, you're probably gasping, oh my gosh, like, how can you say it's literally a dictatorship? But I think with that claim is the underlying assumption that the West has, like, the power that the West has made you not even question what you're believing.
That's definitely true. I think sometimes we, I think definitely Western thought has us to believe, like, certain concepts of society are terrible. Like, people will go out and say socialism is terrible and communism is terrible. But then if you ask them, like, things about their values, they align more with socialist values than they do capitalist values. So I think, I don't know. I think, it's a tough one.
I feel as though the West demonizes things and automatically it's wrong.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree.
And another example that I have, which again is going to seem very controversial, but it's not about the example I'm giving, it's about the concepts behind it. Disclaimer to the people before they cancel me. So for example, with child marriage, the West says child marriage is wrong, but it's practiced in a lot of cultures that, like, well, sub, what's it, what do they call that group of people? The
Sub-Saharan, what?
Not sub-Saharan. Sub. The Global South.
Global South.
Sorry. I struggle. The Global South, a lot of cultures in the Global South practice child marriage for various reasons we don't know. But once the West says it's bad, it's bad. Even when we look at the death penalty. Mm. When some places in, again, the Global South use the death penalty, it's demonized. Everyone is gasping. Everyone is shocked. The other day, what was his name? Who?
In America?
Yeah.
I can't remember his name, but a black man in, I can't remember what state it was. I think it was one of the southern states in America. Yeah. He lost his life. Yeah.
Due to,
I think,
the death penalty.
Yeah, and it was a case that looked shaky. There was evidence that was coming in that could have freed him, allegedly, if they'd had a relook at the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Mm.
And it's just like, when the West does it, nobody cares. Mm. And now, that now links...
That's true.
Do you see where I'm coming from? That now links to the next thing that I'm saying, which is, who defines and decides what knowledge is and what knowledge is not, and what counts as good knowledge and bad knowledge, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Well, I think it does come down to power structures. I mean, even if we're thinking about democracy, like, democracy itself is not probably the best way of governing. Mm-hmm. If you think about, let's take an example of like Singapore. Singapore is one of the richest Asian states in Asia nowadays. But I think in the 1950s, and South Korea as well, is one of the richest Asian states. But when you look at them in 1950, they were some of the poorest countries in the world.
Mm.
And nowadays, they're some of the richest countries. So if we think about what happened between then and now to make them so rich, a lot of those countries went through authoritarian regimes.
Mm.
As in, democracy was not the thing that they were about during the past, probably for about 50 or so years, they had an authoritarian leader in both those countries. So we think about, like, how do we make life better for people? It mm-hmm. certainly wasn't democracy. And if they had been a democratic country, they probably wouldn't be in the like position that they are today. So I guess, yeah, who gets to define what makes democracy so good if it's not best for all people?
And I think that's just the same with a lot of things that we just assume.
Mm.
And yeah, that again links to the most important and the core part of this discussion, which is, how does that reflect in the curriculum? Because obviously the black curriculum is about, let's put black history in the curriculum, but why?
Well, I think if we start thinking about theories of knowledge, when we focus on Western thought and Western ideals, for example, democracy being the best way of governing, I guess we lack understanding of where other cultures have existed for a long mm-hmm. time. Other cultures have had different ways of functioning. If we think about, I don't want to group Africa as like a whole, because in Africa it's so diverse and there's many different cultures and ways of being. But democracy is based in the ideals of, I suppose, individualism.
Mm.
And if you're looking like Western Africa or West Africa in certain Nigerian cultures, or even like the DRC in certain cultures there, or traditional like tribal culture, I guess, it's not really focused on those individual attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
People define themselves, their ontology, as mm-hmm. in their theory of being, mm-hmm. is defined by the other people that they're around, defined by their position in relation to others. So I guess if we completely forget those things and don't acknowledge them in the curriculum, I feel like we're doing a disservice to very valid cultures and theories of knowledge.
That's good. I'm glad you said that, because the claim that it's not necessary, we only represent 4% of the population, things of that nature, it always comes up, and it's just like this. It's an interesting argument, because on the face of it, it seems quite legitimate, it seems quite real. But what we need to acknowledge is the link between identity and knowledge.
Definitely.
Because I think by representing the West in the curriculum as much as much as it is represented, it shuts off a whole a whole shed of knowledge, and by virtue of that, it removes from people's actual identities because we don't feel represented in the curriculum. So I guess that's just something that I wanted to explore as well.
I think there's so much to say on that. I think, like, when we think about, I suppose, what is left out of the curriculum and what impact that has on different people, if we start thinking about, like, let's talk about the race riots. Not the race riots, but the riots that happened, what, last year in the summer. Yeah, race riots. I think they were. Well, it's definitely racially motivated.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. But people's ignorance around what other cultures have contributed to Britain and contemporary Britain. Contemporary Britain would be, I don't want to say in the dirt, but it definitely would not be where it is today without the contributions of black and brown people.
Yeah.
Minority groups in this country have every right to be here because we have contributed so much.
Mm-hmm.
After World War II, the Windrush generation, they came to the UK and they were... We were violated, basically. A lot of people, I know a lot of, like, people my grandparents' age who were deported and sent back to wherever they came from. Don't want to say it like that, but they were sent back to their parents' country, country they probably hadn't been to since they were literally like 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah.
Because apparently they're not British citizens.
Mm-hmm.
We've come and we've built up this country and we're not respected. And it's because of an education system that doesn't teach people that that black and brown people have contributed.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
And it's the lack, again, of knowledge. Asymmetric knowledge, I guess, asymmetric information.
Yeah.
And it's always ignored and put on the sideline. And, we have Mary Seacole in the curriculum. We teach slavery in the curriculum.
Yeah.
And that's, again, it's another point
it's
that
purposeful.
We need to talk about.
It's intentional. Purposeful.
Exactly. And that's what it is. That's why power genuinely comes first. It's about how you manipulate and use the knowledge and how you distribute the knowledge and what you do with it, which is why it's so important. Like, the link between knowledge, identity, power, the whole dynamic is really necessary to acknowledge and investigate and interrogate.
Yeah.
In general, when it comes to thinking about blackness and the lack of it in the West, if that makes sense. Okay, cool. The next thing, which is the decolonizing of the curriculum. Like, what does that even mean? And I feel like we can extend that to decolonizing knowledge. Decolonizing.
What does that entail?
Information. What does that look like and why is it necessary?
I think it's so hard to theorize what decolonizing the curriculum looks like or what decolonizing knowledge looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it definitely starts with...
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No.
I think on a... It depends how deeply we're going.
Yeah.
I think if we start thinking about, once again, epistemologies and, like, the way that people think and the way that they theorize even about knowledge and where knowledge comes from, that's when it gets trickier.
Okay.
I suppose in the curriculum, from a policy standpoint, I think it's a lot easier to implement.
Like, just in terms of policy, just in terms of, this is what we're going to start learning. But
I think Britain just has to get real with itself. Like, if you research what happened at the end of the colonial period, like in the 1950s and 60s, you see how crazy... decolonization itself actually was, like, in Africa, in Kenya, in India, in Palestine as well, in loads of different places. When Britain left and gave these countries independence, they burnt loads of records, loads of colonial papers, basically anything that showed Britain in a bad light. And because they burnt all these things, these countries nowadays don't have the evidence to say, Britain did this and discriminated against us in this way. We know that Britain did discriminate, obviously. Yeah. Think about South Africa. Britain was discriminating. Think about even in the Americas.
Yeah.
There was basically a genocide of Native Americans in Africa. You took Africans and brought them to the Americas. We know that Britain partook in terrible activities, but we don't know to what extent they did.
Exactly.
And that's because they deliberately destroyed those forms of knowledge.
And the West has the power to do so. Power genuinely comes first. Sorry, I just have to take myself back to the original question, which is knowledge power? No, power is knowledge, because it's just that. The knowledge, as already established, knowledge doesn't exist. Nobody knows anything. Really and truly, if we go to to the depths and the crux of what knowledge actually entails, nobody knows anything. And everything that you claim to know is an assumption. You just have the power. You just have to have the power to influence people to believe it, which is what leads me on to talking about the curriculum again. In that, it's very intentional.
It is very intentional
because we looked at a survey recently, and it showed how many people in the UK know about Black history in America compared to the Black history in the UK. Don't get me wrong, this is not a comparison or USA versus the US conversation. What it is not a jab, but I'm pointing my finger at the curriculum in the United Kingdom, because they know what they did. We are learning about Rosa Parks. We are learning about Martin Luther King. We are learning about the bus boycotts. Who knows about the Bristol bus boycotts? Who knows about places like Liverpool? Who knows that the docks in London are still there? Who knows? If you don't go and do the research yourself. There are so many Black historical figures in the UK who have not been acknowledged because it's omitted from the curriculum intentionally. And it's intentional to point fingers away from the UK. Let's look at what happened in America. Let's look at how bad they treated them. No, go on.
I was going to say, the British curriculum, when we learn about Black history, we learn about things that are so far away, so that Britain acts like it didn't have anything happening here. They act like civil rights existed forever in this country. They definitely did not. Mm-hmm. Think about civil rights, even for women.
Yeah.
It's only the other day that women got the right to vote. But for Black people specifically, up until what was it, 1960? I can't remember the exact year, but it was in the 60s that the Civil Rights Act in the UK was enacted. Because before then, you had no Blacks, no dogs, no Irish signs put up. And that was completely legal. Think about MPs. What's his name? Enoch Powell. He went out in Birmingham and said that there's going to be, he did his infamous Rivers of Blood speech talking about how terrible migration is and we shouldn't let in any more migrants. And that was completely allowed. The Conservatives, the Conservative Party was the party of anti-immigration, anti-Black people. And they were openly, they had Hang Nelson Mandela pins in the Conservative Party.
And this is stuff you just
didn't know. Exactly. This is not long ago. This was only a few decades ago. This was must have been the 90s when he had this. And we act as though Britain has never had a racist bone in its body. We can't be, come on now. Let's actually put our thinking caps on.
That's the thing. I want to make the link to how the power structures, they know what they're doing at the top. Mm. The government know exactly what they're doing, how that influences the society. So as a result of the lack of information already, the education system is trying its hardest, don't get me wrong, but already it's failing a lot of people. Already a lot of people are not educated enough as it is in English and maths. That's just it. Let alone the histories, let alone the sociologies, let alone the politics. And it's just that as a result of that, people are only going to believe what they are told to believe.
Yeah.
They're going to believe what convinces them the most. And that's what politics is about. Which party convinces you the most? Exactly. Which one appeals to you the most? And the UK uses class to play with that. They begin to make it's too much. Like, I don't even know how to formulate it. But let me just stick to the point I was making, which is that as a result of the asymmetric information, the asymmetric knowledge, and the omitting of things from the curriculum, the introducing of things that have nothing to do with us, quite frankly, into the curriculum to deter and skew our attention towards something else, it has adverse effects on the society that we're living in. Because whilst it doesn't affect the MPs necessarily, it might affect some. Whilst it doesn't affect the people who are rich, living in the suburbs, you know, just doing living whatever. Mm. Literally living a life that doesn't, like, require them to, like, living a life that doesn't require them to be in the face of the struggles of the working class, basically. We are now sitting here left to pick up the pieces. We have to educate people on what they don't know and what they don't believe in, because to them it doesn't exist.
That's crazy. That's the theory of knowledge right there. The idea that Britain has never done anything wrong, the idea that Britain was a force for good in the world. That is a theory.
Exactly.
Like, that is a part of many British people's being. The fact that Britain itself is a good force.
That just
force.
Reminded me of something. You know, they taught that in universities.
What?
In the UK. They used to teach, like, you know how Africans are savages, how we are going to these countries to make them better.
They taught that at SOAS.
In schools.
They taught that at SOAS University. The university that's supposed to be about decolonizing the curriculum.
Yeah.
When SOAS was opened in what was it, the 20s? I can't remember. Sometime in the early 1900s, it was a colonial school. That's where they taught, like, white people colonial language so they could go and be captains.
Yeah.
And probably go and wage war.
Yeah.
In some poor African.
Yeah.
Not even a country at the time. It was just a territory.
Even when we look at the philosophers that exist in the world, I'm just using philosophy because that's what I know. Like, Kant, Immanuel Kant, for example.
Hey, let me not get started on that guy.
Let's not get started on Kant.
Because if we start talking about him. I rate him, but I don't rate him at the same time.
His theories are nice.
Mm.
It's philosophy. That's what it is.
His theories have influenced international relations. The grounding of the EU, the way that we think about countries cooperating together, they're based on that theories of international relations that he produced. But go on, because he's gay. He did other stuff as well.
I think the point that I'm trying to make is that a lot of these philosophers were actually very, very racist.
Very racist.
It's like, this is what, not only were they teaching themselves, but this is what we're still currently teaching in the curriculum without including the important parts, without including where their ideologies came from, without including what they believed in. And it's just like, I think we need to uncover the lost histories that are being purposefully, whichever the English is, hidden, omitted, and just ignored, quite frankly. Because when we start looking at the history, when we start looking at the context of things, things begin to look a lot more scary than they actually are. Even with what you said about SOAS University, like, who knew that? And it's like, the money that we're sitting on right now, the power that we're sitting on right now, it's like, where does it come from? Who knows? How do we know? And this is the reason why we want Black history to be in the curriculum. And I think the reason why I even asked you this question today is to basically make it clear that this is not superficial. This conversation is not just, okay, yeah, let's have more Black people in history. Let's teach more about the map of Africa. It's not about that. It's about the fact that knowledge is being used as a structural weapon.
It is.
Basically.
I think it's deeper than, like, just teaching about different people. Mm-hmm. We need to talk about philosophers like Immanuel Kant. He used to believe that Black people weren't rational, that they were subhuman.
He
didn't.
He created a hierarchy of race.
Yeah, that's why he thought like, oh, we didn't, like, Black people don't have any theories of knowledge or our own theories of being. We can't act rationally because we're not even human. Like, when we're subhuman, white people are the ideal and Black people are the bottom.
And I think the issue is the westification, if that's even a word. The westification of some things, not even some things, education as a whole. Pythagoras's theorem was not Pythagoras.
Where did they discover that? Somewhere in
probably it was either Arab Asia or Africa. I'm not sure.
Somewhere in, like, the Arab world, they probably found that a long time.
All I know is that it was the global south, basically. And it's like, not only that, but even those who they uphold, the Aristotles, the Socrates, they studied in Africa, by the way. Who knows that? I don't know who knows that. When I found out, I was shocked. I gasped, actually. And it's just, again, interesting. It's interesting. There are things that you say, there are things that you don't say purposely, and then you spin a narrative that works for you. And that's, you know, I'm not a politics student, but again, that's how politics works.
Yeah.
And
politics is theatre, man.
It's theatre, it's a performance, it's an act. Mm. The government is a stage.
Trust me. If you ever watch PMQs, yeah, or any of them, anything where a politician has to go and make a speech, mm-hmm. my man is acting. He probably rehearsed that 10 times before. You need to give him an Oscar, really.
Literally.
You need to give them an Oscar.
I was going to say something and it left me.
I was
going to
say something as well.
Yeah, we need to both arrange ourselves and think about what we're going to say. Was along the lines of, yes, that's the thing. Whenever we bring it up, it gets sidelined. And I think that's the problem because we're dismissing it as something that it's not. I think people assume that we want Black history in the curriculum because of, I don't know, Black supremacy, or we think Black people are the best in the world and we think we need to talk about them more. No. It's a matter of identity, as I said. Omitting somebody's identity starts from ignoring and not talking about their history, if that makes sense.
I think it is about, it's about those types of theories of knowledge. If we don't uproot the idea that the British Empire wasn't a force for good,
mm-hmm.
we somehow were allowing Black people to think that before the British Empire got to us or got to our cultures 500 or whenever 100 years ago they got to us, we were doing nothing. We were waiting about for
for
white people to come and
waiting
save
for
us.
Something to happen.
But that is not the case.
That's the
thing. So not the case. India, like, I don't want to talk about like different cultures, but if you think about India, for example, India was like the hub for India's GDP, made up about like probably like 20% of the world's GDP before colonization. Timbuktu, which everyone just says, yeah, I'm going, like, what do they say with that saying, like, oh yeah, that's in Timbuktu, as in a faraway place. Timbuktu is one of the first universities in the world. There's so many like cultural places outside of the West that have been forgotten and omitted from history, and because we omit them, we allow Black people and we allow brown people to feel like we are less than, but we are not less than. We've had cultural experiences. I mean, we've had cultural revolutions.
Mm.
Just the theories of knowledge that have been produced by the West would have us believe that we are little and are nothing. And then we think about what impact does that have on Black people? That is a low self-esteem thing.
And that's like, what I'm saying.
That's like, some people gonna, I don't want to take away from personal responsibility, but I think the idea that is perpetuated, that Black people were basically nothing and not civilized before white people came to us, allows Black people to act in a certain way or makes us want to act in a certain way. I don't know. I don't want to say that people who are in prison today, some of them who feel low self-esteem is because of the education that they've been given. But I think if you don't have an understanding of how brilliant your culture was and brilliant where you have come from is,
you begin to internalize
exactly
what has been projected onto you.
It's a projection.
Exactly. And it's very scary what is happening. And I think what doesn't get acknowledged enough is the fact that we're playing with people's identities here.
Yeah.
Like, we're actually playing with people's existences. Because genuinely, without your history, what really are you? When you look at like the grand scheme of things, without knowing where you're from, without your heritage, without knowing like literally where you come from, what do you amount to?
What did Kamala Harris say? Poor girl. What did she say? She said, "You did not fall out of a coconut tree."
Yes,
exactly. You didn't, man.
You exist in the context.
Exactly.
You exist in the context.
Literally.
And our context as Black people, especially Black British people, is being like played with.
It's true.
And then when we say something about it, we are made to look illogical.
They make us look like we're begging it.
Yeah.
Like
where's this coming from? Mm. Why are you saying that? Why is that your... And it's just, again, it's because of the lack of knowledge. And it's a cycle that is difficult, because without the curriculum teaching people, they're not going to know, if that makes sense.
Mm.
And without them knowing, they're not going to want it in the curriculum.
Yeah.
So it's a cycle we're trying to break. It's a cycle that we're trying to break. And yeah, we just need to make ourselves heard. We just need to make ourselves loud enough.
Yeah. I think there's supposed to be a lot of hope. We have a new Labour government. Everyone is hoping that they're going to, I don't know, do something good for the education. Like, even in Wales, someone else who works for the Black Curriculum, Angel, she was a part of the Welsh curriculum incorporating a lot more Black history into it. And I'm really happy that Wales is able to achieve that.
Yeah.
But in England, where there are even more Black people, and England is a lot more diverse than Wales is, and it's a much larger country. We need that a lot. Yeah. The idea that Britishness is the standard that everyone's measured to, and that before British people came to anywhere in the Commonwealth, nothing was going on, that needs to get dismantled. And yeah, if we don't do that, then we're messing up people's identity for real.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what I wanted the main focus to be on. What's the time real quick? Okay. Crazy. I think I want to just quickly do a recap of not necessarily what we've spoken about, but what the question is. So again, when we look at the claim that knowledge is power, it just, you know, it suggests that if you know things, if you work hard, then you will have influence, you'll be powerful. And that is very deceptive, I think.
I
think there's a reason why they don't say that power is knowledge, because then it will begin to reveal a lot of things to people. And that's the thing. Somebody said it on TikTok. The worst thing that you did is give Black people in this country an education, because now we know the issues of class. Now we know the issues of race. Unfortunately, the truth is we're coming. That's what I want the people to know. We are on our way. We are coming, and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to add?
I've learned a lot. Knowledge is power. No, power is knowledge. Sorry.
Yeah.
But I think when you remove all context from anything, it's easy to say that knowledge is power. But once you actually deep the fact that power structures have shaped the knowledge that someone even has in the first place.
Exactly.
Yeah, what is knowledge then?
Thank you. I think that's even the question in and of itself. Like, what is knowledge? What do we know? Is there anything that we actually even know? And yes, granted, there are ways to logically come to conclusions. So there are ways of reason that you can use. Obviously, since the sun has risen for the past how many days that the world has existed, it will rise again tomorrow. Understandable. However, there are concepts, especially when it comes to conversations about morality, that is just, it's not subjective, but there is no clear-cut answer. It's just the person who is the most influential who is going to seem the most right.
That's facts. That is facts.
So when we are digesting a colonial curriculum, that's what it is. It's just, it's very, we need to rethink.
Digesting the colonial curriculum is only going to give you colonial outcomes. People are going to act with a colonial mindset. Listen, the things I've heard people my our age say, I'm thinking, I don't understand. I don't know where this guy has even got this idea from. And it's I think when you leave secondary school, they don't instill you with critical thinking skills that university does. Like, I think even certain subjects, I think philosophy is a brilliant subject because you get them critical thinking skills. You think beyond like the realm of what is here. There's a realm beyond the physical. Like, knowledge that's in our mind is not a physical thing, but it is so important and so powerful
and has so much influence.
And I think even coming into university, there's colonial mindsets that I've gotten from school that I had to just dismiss. Like, there's things that I used to think when I was like, 16? I'm just like, I'm looking at myself like, what are going for this year?
Because I even feel as though even within universities, because as good as university is and as good as you've made it sound, it's like,
it's not that good. I'm just saying.
I think it's also important to look at what is being taught specifically. And not only what is being taught, but how it's being taught. Let's look at representation. Mm-hmm. Representation is important, whether we like it or not. We're not just throwing buzzwords here, even though it might seem like it. But even when you're citing a bunch of people in degrees like philosophy, there's a lack of representation. Mm-hmm. I think in certain fields, it's becoming a lot more diverse. But what does diversity really look like? Maybe a couple names here and there. But even with the lecturers, there aren't enough.
I've never had a black lecturer.
I haven't had a black lecturer.
Yeah. And we go different unis, so yeah. It's a bit mad still.
That's just the truth. And I'm sure if you ask your friends from different universities again, they will tell you that they've never had a black lecturer. And it's just about, yeah, I don't know. Let's not get into that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'll be here forever.
Trust.
But, yeah, I think this was a really good conversation. I really appreciate the turn that it took, and I hope you understand the relevance of the question to
trust. I do, man.
To what we're even like talking about as a whole. Thank you for being here.
Shall I make last comments?
Please do, because that's what I was about to ask.
Guys, if you want to learn about some more black philosophers, I say go read Angela Davis. Well, I'm pointing at you as if you're Angela Davis.
Yeah, because I was gonna say go read what I haven't
that was
read
a suggestion. Angela Davis, who else? Achebe. I can't remember his first name, but he's a Nigerian author. He wrote Things Fall Apart. Mm-hmm. That is a book all about West African theories of knowledge and mm-hmm. theories of being, and the idea that West African people or African people in general don't have culture or don't have depth to them beyond what European people brought to them.
Mm-hmm.
He really, I guess, showed that in his books that he wrote. But yeah, I think those are two philosophers and two authors who I rate a lot. Mm. Yeah, read my Substack, Letters with Roots.
Yes.
That's it, man. I hope you guys get to hear from me again.
Great. Yeah. I'm going to put your TikTok. Do you want me to put your Instagram?
Yeah, you can put my TikTok, Instagram, whatever.
In the description. Yeah, man. Great. Also, remember to check out the Black Curriculum.
Yes.
The work is being done over there is immaculate.
Yes. Sorry. We both do a lot of work for them. So yeah. Big up the Black Curriculum. They're allowing these conversations to be had for all.
Yeah. And they are advocating to bring the conversations to tables where things can actually change.
Trust.
And if you want to be part of that change, obviously check out the website and see what you can do, see how you can contribute. And yeah, one thing that I want to leave off on, I feel like I never really give closing statements, is I feel like I've said this in quite a few episodes, but I will say it again. Interrogate your beliefs. Don't just sit on assumptions and assume that something is the way that it is just because it is the way it is. There should be a reason why you believe everything that you believe, and you should identify what that reason is. But yeah, that's it from me. That's it from Amarian. Thank you so much again for coming.
Thank you, guys. Well, thank you for having me.
Yep. And I will see you in the next episode.
Big up your souls.